Check, check, check.
There's still plenty of room at the table if people sitting in the back chairs want to join us. You should feel free to do so.
I'm just going to give it a couple for some people who said they would come. One of them is here, so give it one or two more for the other person I'm thinking of. I don't know if I intended to put you on the spot or not, but I did. for over celebrating last night? Oh, all right. We'll also wait for any pending medical emergencies. Why don't we get started here? I forget if I need the formalities of getting recording started or not.
I think we do. They're good. They're going.
All right.
Sorry.
We held it up just for you.
Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we've got the recording started for working group members who are here. Just the usual reminder to update your statements of interest. We do have some people here who are not on the working group. We rarely get to see each other, so I'd like to just start off with a round the table on who the working group members are. And what brings you here? And also, just for our information, if anybody in the audience wants to identify yourself, that'd be nice too. See, it's good to know who's interested in our process. If we could start with James.
Wait, Don, are we allowed to assert our privacy rights?
Just pardon? I heard the word privacy, which doesn't surprise me.
Privacy rights?
Certainly.
I'll appoint my representative.
Do we start, Don? Yeah, so James Bladel, GoDaddy.
Sarah Bakke, GoDaddy. Sarah Bakke, GoDaddy.
Rich Mertinger, GoDaddy.
David Cake, Electronic Frontiers Australia.
Holly Reich, ALAC.
Christian Dawson, Internet Infrastructure Coalition.
Val Sherman, Smith, Gambrell, and Russell, IPC.
Volker Greimann, Key Systems Registrars.
Lindsay Hamilton Reed, 1&1, Registrar.
Ollie Hope, Hague, Registrar.
Eleanor Bradley, .uk, and Nominet Registrar Services.
Kathy Kleiman, Fletcher, Hilden, Hildreth, and non-commercial.
Stephanie Coffing, NCSG.
Joan Kerr, NPOC, and full of curiosity and an open slate for learning.
Karen Mellon, Cherryful Mark Monitor, Thomson Reuters, IPC.
Marika Konings, ICANN staff.
Ben Butler, ESSAC, and GoDaddy.
Don Blumenthal, Chair, ESSAC. Completely unaffiliated these days, just kind of hanging out.
Graham Bunton, Registrar, Two Cows, and Co-Vice Chair of the Working Group.
Mary Wong, ICANN staff.
Darcy Southwell, Registrars, Domain.com, and DirectEye.
Amar L. Sutter, a non-commercial stakeholder group in CUC. Whether I'm a member of this working group is debatable.
So, like, leave the bad guy to last. Dick Leaning from Europol Cybercrime Centre. Law enforcement, in case anyone has any.
If folks on Adobe could identify yourselves while we're doing some logistical stuff.
We are from WNCCTLD.
would like to follow some information from this session.
Shima Rorda, Open Provider, Registrar.
Abdul Munim Awad, I'm a fellow from Sudan.
Daniela Andela, ICANN staff.
Jacob Williams, Interlink, Registrar.
Laura Hutchison, Nominet.uk and Nominet Registrar Services.
Sergey Garbunov from RU Center.
I thought we were going to introduce the invisible people behind the curtain there. Just to let people know, the other co-chair is Steve Metallitz with the intellectual property constituency, but he is, and I suspect some other members of the working group are tied up with some of the IANA. IANA-related sessions. And to save a second, I'll say the Alex Deacon from the MPAA just came in. Just we've got a full roster. People know. Very often we will do something of a working group, open working group session. We're at something of a break point in our work, a logical break point. So I think what we're going to do, I know what we're going to do today, is go through our current progress to refresh ourselves. Sometimes it's easy to lose sight of what happened before, and also to inform the people who are here who are not part of the working group. We really urge, say, open discussion on anything as it comes up among the working group members, but also people who are not members, but who have thoughts. We have, from the beginning, looked to make this as open a process as we could. In the sense of contributions from people who aren't the working group and contributions from people from different constituencies. Dick joined us after much begging for the enemy to come into play. But having been on his side of the fence for many, many years, doing internet investigations, at least one of us looks at him fondly. I am going to take a second to bring the slides up because I can't read. I can't read them. Oh, that's my problem. So let me bring them up on my...
Just while this is Graham for the transcript, just while Don's bringing up the slides, there's a few people in the Adobe Connect that's probably worth recognizing because they're putting their names in there. We've got Susan Prosser from Domain Tools. We've got Michael R. Graham from Expedia and the IPC. Che Yu Kin, who is an observer. Todd Williams from the Turner Broadcasting and IPC. I believe there is a dial-in line for those remote that would like to participate, and if not, you can type questions or comments into the chat, and we'll try and make sure they get into the transcript.
Yeah, I appreciate your picking up on monitoring the room there. Back to basics. The whole issue of privacy proxy, what it was, what it does or doesn't mean, and how prevalent or not prevalent it is within the domain registration space goes back a long time. Issues of accuracy and accessibility and verification, validation. Have also been out there a long time, but they've been focused on domain registrations, the registrants directly. Over time, the pressures to put that kind of scrutiny, that kind of formal recognition of privacy proxy that existed for registrars grew. And this took a long time. I mean, I remember discussions about this when I was still in government, and I left at the end of 2006. I was co-author of a letter from the U.S. Federal Trade Commission in 1998 about accuracy of the WHOIS system. So these issues are ever with us, and we're still looking at them 17 years later, 16 years, given when we wrote the letter. Finally, for lack of a better term, without a value judgment, the whole issue of affirmative accreditation of privacy proxy providers became part of the RAA 2013 RAA negotiations. That field is full of issues. We've been at this work a little over a year. So, and that's just by way of saying, if those negotiations had also taken on what we did, they wouldn't be done yet. It would be the RAA of 2015, maybe. So what that agreement did was set up an interim proxy privacy registration accreditation program. But it explicitly provided for the GNSO to set up a group like this, the proxy privacy services, accreditation issues, policy development process working group. And I actually got that right on the first try. We have been at work for about 15 months now, but I think it's fair to say we really only have been at work for 13 months. We set a very aggressive schedule. We're a little behind, but again, we were aggressive. And I think we all are satisfied where we are. The GNSO established the working group and gave us a set of issues to look at. It was a massive set of issues in the 30s, I think, mid to upper 30s, 37. So one of the first things we did is we reached out to the various SOs and ACs and constituencies, and we broke these down into functional, as best as we could establish them, categories, so that we could tackle a bunch of issues in a somewhat coherent. ICANN and coherent, that's an interesting pair. Mm-hmm. Coherent form. We've been meeting weekly for that entire time. We've had these face-to-face meetings at ICANN sessions, and we also were the pilot, and I think it was a very successful pilot. There was a day-long face-to-face session in Los Angeles. This is good. We can all meet, but it's only an hour and a quarter, and everybody who could make it in one place was very useful. Next slide, please. And I should probably do that, too. We've completed our preliminary recommendations on most of our categories. We've looked at mandatory minimum requirements for accreditation. And as you might expect, because many of the issues follow the same type of track, we've used the registrar accreditation as a model for much of what we've done. It's the core faces fundamentally, I think, the same sets of issues. Proxy privacy provides some additional challenges, largely from an additional stage of separation between the registrant and the registrar. We've recommended that any terms of service have to be published openly, not just in a, if there are such things, a paper contract. There have to be designated points of contact, an old term in the WHOIS debates, for reporting abuse. We've looked at relay of communications. If there is a request for the underlying registration data, what are the rules if and when that information should be forwarded from the proxy privacy provider to the and I'm going to use the term beneficial registrant. You know, in a proxy privacy setup, I think our, the proxy really is the registrant, but they're not the party of interest. So again, my terminology is beneficial registrants, and I'll ignore the legalities. I am a lawyer, but I haven't practiced in over 20 years, so I can ignore things. We've looked. One thing we did is the historical term that goes with relay is reveal. Pass along the information, but when do you take away the cloak? But in our discussions, we realized reveal is really two different things. Are you telling the requester directly? That's a kind of reveal, but the other kind is posting the registration information in the open. So we chose to break reveal into disclose, the one-off, here's who the beneficial registrant is, or publish. You know, put the information out there. And we've also looked at de-accreditation. You know, what happens if an accredited proxy privacy provider, either breaks the rules or for whatever, or decides, we don't want to do this anymore. Next slide. We do, and these are the, broad areas that are of most interest and where we have come to some levels of agreement. We do have some issues where there isn't a consensus yet. You know, the appropriate standard for being able to contact a proxy privacy and what the rules are for responding to inquiries. An escalation process when relay requests are passed along but get some level of delivery failure. We did a lot of discussions on formal email server definitions and protocol responses. It was kind of interesting. Chris was a big part of that, and I went back to my days as a email systems administrator. Issues of disclosure, you know, how to deal with requests for disclosure from, for example, law enforcement or third parties. I think the most common example that people would think of is intellectual property representatives, because those are the ones that make the headlines. But another example is private organizations do bring suit to stop botnets, just the way law enforcement will bring enforcement actions to deal with botnets. Microsoft is one who's particularly prominent, but others have done that. Next slide. We're looking at the different standards for, and this is just expanding on what we talked about. I just talked about different standards for maintaining the point of contact, and we have looked out to other ongoing ICANN processes to assist us, not just the Registrar Accreditation Agreement. The IRTP what's the I stand for, James?
Inter
registrar, thank you. Transfer process has informed us, but we haven't come to conclusions. How responsive should the provider be? Again, we're looking to the RAA to inform us. The standard B for ensuring provider, the ability to contact the provider. You know, for example, publishing on the website, which again is modeled after the RAA, but still has some tweaking to do to address differences that may occur in a proxy provider space. I'll get to that later. Next slide. We're looking at, again, I mentioned relay requests and what happens when there's no response. Now, we're very careful to say that there may not be a response because the beneficial registrant chooses not to. There may not be a response for other reasons, but we wanted to really focus on where the, you know, here's where we're getting back to some old who is issues, where the information that the proxy privacy service provider has about the beneficial registrant may be inaccurate, where the beneficial registrant may have affirmatively chosen to duck, bad term, duck service, to be scarce, not to be contactable at all, as opposed to just looking and ignoring. And we really focused on looking at where we know, or where the proxy privacy provider should know that something's wrong with the contact information, where whether it's inadvertent, which is still going to be, you know, there's going to be a responsibility to keep it accurate, and whether inadvertent or just somebody's gone offline but held on to the domain. So something we're still looking on, and it's what is an affirmative failure to respond? What do you need? What does the provider need to see in the way of return traffic? Most of this assumes email notification to say, okay, there is a real problem here, as opposed to the beneficial registrant just ignoring. You know, how much can the proxy privacy do about that, as opposed to just knowing there's an affirmative problem? And again, as it suggests up here, you know, the trigger for escalation isn't failure itself, but the provider's awareness that there's a problem. And we're still looking at the minimum mandatory requirements for escalation of relay, you know, where there's a persistent delivery. What is persistent delivery? Non-delivery. And I could go into examples of the messages you might see if a message bounces, but we've all seen them, so I won't bother. Next, you know, these are examples of the language under consideration. I'm not going to read them, but what does the provider, if email fails, what other affirmative forms should the provider take? You know, print out a copy and send it, go knock on a door if it's, you know, whatever. Is email the only measure that has to be taken? Issues of must versus should. This is the kind of thing we're tweaking. Must a provider take additional action, or is it an option? How much does the provider have a choice of how to forward a relay? And is there an ability to charge for it? Charge the requester? And if so, who takes the burden of the cost? And if there should be any limits on those costs, if there should be limits on the number of requests by the same requester? Because sometimes this stuff, historically, it's harassment. Registrars or proxy privacy, and we're aware of that, but the dividing lines are very difficult to come up with. Next, this has been an issue that for what it's worth, I expected to be much more contentious, and I'm not saying it's not, but we came up to some groupings fairly quickly that we don't have a consensus on, but the, I think it's fair to say the discussion focused on fundamentally whether proxy privacy registration should be available to all or should they be limited, and if so, who should be ineligible. Now, over history, it's been easy. Well, commercial, non-commercial. Well, tried to define those. Kathy and I have had the discussions for over 10 years, or not directly, but, you know, I remember talking to her about them in context from law enforcement to consulting to PIR and beyond. And one of the persistent questions was, well, why does a registrant really need to be public? The easy thing was commercial, and, well, okay, what does commercial mean? But beyond that, contrary to, I think, a lot of perceptions, there are legitimate commercial reasons for proxy privacy. The best example, I think, came to us through our IPC members, who suggested that during product development, there may be a domain out there to facilitate a new product's use, whether it's email or a website or whatever, but before the product's released, the company doesn't want to know who's behind it. So we kind of focused in on, okay, it's only there's a company that's actually doing financial transactions online should be reachable directly and not through privacy proxy. We're still struggling on how to define that. We're still struggling on whether there should be this kind of distinction. But we focused on that type of distinction fairly quickly. And now where we are, I think, is working out if we have a consensus on either and how to define one of our options. And I think we're focusing in on again, transactional versus non-transactional. Pardon?
Some of us disagree.
Yes, generally. No, I'm... this is, as it says on the slide, working group chair suggestion, not accepted across the board by any means. Next. And how to deal with third-party requests. This is where I said we're at a logical breakpoint. The representatives of the registrar community and the intellectual property community have very, I think it's fair to say, distinct Graham's reaction there might suggest there are distinct differences of opinion. And a couple of months ago, some members of those two constituencies broke out on their own to focus because they've got the clearest view, and it was going to be, it's very involved. I think it's fair to say they're coming close to the point where the working group will be able to look at a document in what form is unclear, not established, but at least where that process will finish. And then the working group will focus on the work of that subgroup. I think once we have finished that, we'll have our final draft. We'll have a complete draft. The group will go back over and look at it. But I think the final steps are including that information, having the working group discuss it, doing a relatively short-term review of the whole document and getting a draft out for public comment.
I'm sorry, I could just get a clarification. When you said we'll be ready with our final draft, do you mean our final draft of our initial report?
I apologize. Sometimes people point out to me I get sloppy with terminology.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. We will be getting to the point we will be reviewing our final draft and then publishing an interim report. Okay, got it right that time. To me, the interim report.
Which someday will then lead to our final draft of our final report. Hey,
someday.
This isn't my process here. I'm just...
Well, I think I just jumped to the next. We hope to have a final, our interim report published, and be in a position to have completed the public comment period before we get to Buenos Aires. Yes. That's it. I think I rambled a bit more than I wanted to, but that's people know me know that's not uncommon. At this point, I saw one reaction to something I said.
Yes.
So I'm going to start. I saw one. There may have been other more subtle ones. I'd like to open it to the working group to make comments, general comments on things as I represented them.
Why don't we go back to the questions as we've got them in the slides?
Just one by one?
Yeah.
Okay. Here?
Yeah.
Here. Okay. Here's the overall slide on where we're still working on a working group, looking for a working group consensus, if at all possible. I think maybe I'd like to, because I'm kind of free form in my approach at times. I only saw reaction on one, so rather than go through and just get blank stares, like the ones that happen on phone calls sometimes, I'd like to do this is a reminder, but I'd like to have people jump in where you think we need to talk more, or I need to be corrected in what I said, or whichever. I'll turn my red light off and let other people light theirs.
This is Simon, our provider, for the record, sorry. I have two questions about this.
If you could identify yourself for the transcript, please.
Yes, I'm Simon of Open Provider. Two questions about two of the cases, two of the outstanding questions you still have. One of them is the contactability issue. Isn't that already covered in the new RAA, where it says that the email verification, if the registrar's name holder's address or the account holder is non-contactable, we should start verification, and if it fails, suspend the domain name. Isn't the account holder, in the end, the person that really pays for the domain and is behind the privacy proxy services?
Depends. Okay, I'm going to jump in quickly. Okay, no, let me let it go. Enough.
Volker Greimann, Key Systems. Yes, in many cases, the account holder would be the one that owns the domain name. However, we are looking at cases also where privacy services may not be affiliated with the registrar directly, may be provided by a reseller or by a completely unrelated third party. In that case, the registrar would simply not know who is the underlying registrant, and therefore the privacy proxy provider would have a corresponding obligation to verify his customer, because the registrar would only be able to verify the privacy proxy service provider and not the underlying registrant.
Okay, clear. Second question about the transactional domains. Who should define which domain, whether a domain is transactional, yes or no? Is that the provider of the service, or is that the registrant himself?
We've had a lot of discussion about that one. I'm just a little bit surprised by the word transactional. I think the majority of us around the table or in the committee realized distinguishing between commercial and non-commercial was just so difficult. And indeed, there are many legitimate reasons in the commercial sphere why someone would want a domain name. It just became very difficult to A, work out a difference, and I'm not sure the transactional gets there anyway, but B, does it matter? And it was hard to figure out, does it matter? So we've had a lot of discussion. This is a reasonably new term, but I think it reflects the long discussions we've had, not only what's the definition of transactional, non-transactional, or more familiar to us, commercial, non-commercial. And then if you can actually agree on a definition, does it matter? I think the majority of us have said it doesn't matter, but it's still on this table, I think.
Uh, Kieran, you came to mind when I heard the word majority, so I'll just pass it to you.
Thanks, John. This is Kieran from Mark Monitor. You are prescient with your introduction of my comments. I do take offense to the term majority, and I think that that's something that we've also had long discussions about. So let's please be careful with terminology, because there's been a lot of concern in the community this week about misrepresentation, and I think that's probably something. So let's put that on the record, that the majority of people have not said that, and the majority of stakeholder groups represented in this organization have not said that. It's an ongoing discussion. It's a complicated one. I think the majority of people have acknowledged that it's a complicated question and that there's a lot more left to discuss about it. But let's not make any determinative statements here about what we've determined one way or the other. Thanks.
But what we can say for certain is that there's no consensus. Kathy Kleiman on non-commercial. That there's no consensus on moving towards a change on this or deep diving into what ultimately is content review. What's going on that website? We haven't, if we go down this path, the fights we will have over what is transactional, which is ambiguous. I don't think we've even begun a deep dive that this is where we're going on this. I run a nonprofit, but you can give me money, but you're doing it through another organization. A lot of small businesses, medium-sized businesses, nonprofits aren't taking the money themselves. They're going through third parties and other websites that may or may not be apparent. We could spend another 3 years on this, guys. I just wanted to share that Stefan, is it Wetzel from .de. Got up and he was talking about this in the public forum, but one of the big sessions, where he said, you know, think carefully about transactional, guys. We have laws in my country, he said, that require you to identify on your website if you're transactional, if you're a certain type of commercial. You know, pass those laws in your countries, leave the domain name system out of this. So I just share that because it was so relevant and it was just 2 days ago. Thank you.
Which forum was this?
In your mic if you're going to talk, please.
Kathy, I think that was that All Things Who Is.
Was it? Okay.
I think so, because I remember that statement.
Okay. Thank you. They're all the sessions, all the big sessions are blurring. Sorry. Right.
Oh, so briefly, James Blail speaking for the transcript. And that's something that Volker, I think, has informed us of many times. And I think that gets to some of the principled and practical problems associated or complexities associated with this issue. I mean, determining whether or not a domain name is being used, or let's say a domain name is associated with a website, and then the website is associated with transactions. So it's a couple of steps removed, and then there are other intermediary mechanisms, I think, as Kathy and Holly were alluding to. I think that it really boils down to, is this even something possible to do? You know, if we want to set aside the principles and the theoretical and the hypotheticals and just say, how do you know? Where's the bright line? And then what do you do? And I think if you can't answer those questions, if we can't come together around some answers for those questions, then you know, I think that it's pretty clear that this is a non-starter and we should be careful before we dive in. We can spend 3 years on this. The temporary provision sunsets in 2017, just a reminder, so we do have a ticking clock. We don't have 3 years, but it's something that we should say, you know, is this something that we want to break our pick on trying to solve? Thanks.
Thanks, Volker. Kieran Melantrievel from Mark Monitor. I think that, first of all, since we started this in 2014 and the sunset is 2017, I think that's exactly 3 years. So I think we do have that time, and I think that if it's an important issue, we should take that time. What I really raise my hand to say, though, is that I think it's actually a fairly dishonest characterization to continue to say that we don't deal in content examination all the time in the policymaking process at ICANN. and in the issues that we confront, certainly as far as IP owners and registrars interact, we look at content all the time. When you determine whether or not a domain name is abusive, you're not just looking at whether or not the trademark is being used in the domain name itself, but often you're looking at the content of the website itself to see if it's free speech, to see if it's protected, to see indeed if it's a commercial use, which would maybe be dispositive on something like whether or not it would be considered parody. So I think we need to step back, because it's a very compelling argument to say that we don't want to get into content examination and we don't want to get into what the website is actually going to be used to. But we've been doing it for years. It's important, and it's actually a dispositive examination in a lot of things that we look at when we are determining abuse online. So, you know, yes, it is a complicated issue. I've said that twice just this morning. And it will take us a long time to get to a conclusion on this. That's fair and representative of all views. But, you know, it's not as if we haven't done this before, and it's not as if it isn't an important issue. Thanks.
Yes, I would agree with Kieran that a lot of the problems that third parties and especially rights holders have are not with the domain name itself, but with the content it leads to. However, content is, at least that last time I looked, not part of the remit of ICANN. It's hosting. Content is hosting. Most domain registrars, some do, some don't, do not have even the hosting under them, and the privacy proxy service. Privacy proxy services most certainly don't. So I'm still not certain if in the end we will have firm policies for the privacy proxy services that will deal with what is essentially not part of ICANN's remit and may rely on best practice recommendations in this case instead of a firm policy.
I wanted to dovetail on what James was... I'm sorry?
You have to identify.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Christian Dawson with the Internet Infrastructure Coalition, ISPCP. I wanted to dovetail on what James was saying, because I think that we're talking about potentially building a big machine to address this. We would have to look into arbitration processes, how we're going to do, what we're going to do, how we're going to monitor content. And I come from the web hosting arena. And one of the things that I really like about that space is you can start a web hosting company in your basement. There are things that are really... Innovation comes on the internet because there are lots of small businesses that are driving that innovation that can do exciting things. You don't need to be a huge company to get started. And I'm always very... I ask the question whenever we get into a system where you're going to need to have layers and layers and layers of identification processes, make it so that... It really requires a lot to get started. You can't start with a small organization and get going. I ask, well, toward what end? We have to take a look at what it is we are achieving, what it is we think we can achieve if we build this big machine. And I don't think we've answered that question either. Can we do it is one question. But if we take the process of ratcheting up the bar as to what it takes to be able to offer this service and do it that way, what are we achieving at the end of the day?
Thank you, Christian. I have James in the queue.
Yeah, so just quickly, I'm not really clear on who was being dishonest by saying that ICANN's remit does not include content. Content is hosting. There are no hosting constituencies. I mean, the ISPC is kind of close, Christian, but not exactly there. I think that we do review content as a matter of our... overall portfolio of services, and our terms of service give us actually broader latitude to deal with content issues than we would see under ICANN policies. So it's actually, we prefer it when we have a problem that's hosting, because we can kill it. It's not always true when we're simply providing registration services for other content providers. And I think that this continual confusion of those two issues or blurring of that line is, you know, it's something that comes up quite a bit, and ICANN, it was in our discussion earlier in the GAC session about the sensitive strings and safeguards and how that might apply to content that might be used for some prospective TLD someday, and it comes up with a lot of misguided or misconstrued complaints filed under Section 3.18 of the REA. So, you know, content is something that I think it's what we all came to talk about, but unfortunately it's slightly outside of the tent of what ICANN can do. The service providers here, I think, have voluntarily waded into this area under their own terms of service, but it's not under the umbrella of consensus policy, not within the picket fence, I think, as our friend Jeff Newman might say.
Thanks, James. Do we have anyone else in the queue? David Cake? Say your name.
I said something similar to this in the old things, who is section here. This is one of these things where ultimately we're asking the question of a question that depends on us knowing the use of the website and the content at the time of registration, or in a sense, and we can't ever actually do that, like know that reliably. What we should instead be asking is there a way, should the transactional use change how we deal with reveal and things like that, perhaps, would be a better... I don't think we will ever answer this question because we're asking the wrong question. We're saying, because we're depending on knowing the future, essentially. We're depending on knowing what content is on the site at time of registration. And you can't.
Maybe let's back up and say, if we agree, which clearly is still under discussion, to make a distinction between whether you call it corporate, non-corporate, transactional, non-transactional, what implication would that have on the way we operate? And maybe the way through this is to say, does this distinction flow through to everything else that has been decided or will be decided around the table? And maybe that's an easier way to deal with this issue. Thanks.
Stephanie
Perrin, for the record. Excuse my ignorance if I'm not up to date on all the research that's been done on this issue, because I'm finding it hard to navigate the new site and find things. But I'm looking for research that demonstrates that the ISP route to takedown for crime, I mean, oddly enough, I'm actually, as a privacy advocate, very much against crime, you know? So we're not trying to put anyone out of business here, except the criminals. Where's the proof that the ISP route doesn't work? I had this discussion with Don the other night, and he assured me that domain name information was useful, indeed mandatory, for investigating crime. But I'm not that a distinction on commercial, non-commercial for these matters. There's so much other evidence, if you have a serious matter, that you get at the ISP. Why does ICANN have to step into regulation of financial services or non-financial? I mean, really, that is so deeply into content that we can't go back. I mean, some of us argue that we're deeper already into content than we should be at ICANN, but I can at least understand the intellectual property trademark argument surrounding the use of words in domain names. I cannot, the minute you start looking at what's happening on the website. To me, that's a pretty clear demarcation line, and the fact that we're having a problem with the bright line, I don't get it, so if you can show me the research, I'm anxious to learn. Thanks.
Okay, I think we've got... Sorry about that, I think. I'm going to go slowly because we were trying to reestablish audio in the... In Adobe. Oh, boy. I just want to suggest one thing. What I said yesterday was not that domain name... was just that there have been some statements flying that law enforcement or the private party community does not use domain name information. And my suggestion was that that is not true. It's not always used. Frankly, when I was doing cases, it was rarely used, except as a research tool, not to bring a case. But it was more just clarifying some inaccurate statements that are very common out there about the use of domain registration information. I'd like to finish the queue as it stands now, and then at least take a break to see if. Huh? Oh.
We've got five down the middle.
Oops. And Kieran, yes. And then at least see if we want to talk about anything else. But this kind of helps explain how there are some areas where we really need to take the time, and also just suggest that people who are not on the working group don't hesitate to contribute. We talk every week.
I have a couple of comments. I had my hand up initially to respond to the gentleman. I'm sorry, I don't know your name.
Christian,
Mr. Dawson. So your comment about what we're trying to accomplish with this provision. I don't know how involved you were in the group when this issue first was presented, but the proponents of this provision actually submitted a white paper to this group, in which we I believe quite neatly outlined the goals of the proposal. So if you want to examine what we're trying to accomplish, it actually boils down quite simply to one thing, which is to achieve contactability of somebody engaging in transactional activities online, similar to or at least along the same lines as that which is standard in most international jurisdictions in a brick-and-mortar world. So, for example, you have to display a business license if you're selling goods and services, and you have to register your information with perhaps the Chamber of Commerce, for as one example. So I think it boils down to that, but there's a lot of actually really good information in that white paper. Now, whether or not you agree with that white paper and the conclusions of that white paper and sign on to it is another issue entirely, but if you're asking the question what it is that we're trying to accomplish, I think the answer is contained therein. Before you respond, I just would like to say my other point, which I'm in the queue for, and that is, like, Stephanie, I'm really excited about the question that you're asking about why the ISP route is inadequate, because Mark Monitor actually is sitting on just a mountain and a wealth of data about that issue. We do, thousands probably of abuse complaints daily, I think, probably. Thanks. How can it be that I'm too quiet? I'll get closer. So we're sitting on a wealth of information about that, actually, and I think that the numbers are really quite poor. When we talk about the ISPs that are present here at ICANN or in the room, I think we probably have great compliance rates with those people. They're super cooperative because they're here, they're participating, whatever. But overall, I think that when we go the ISP route for compliance with abuse complaints that are kind of all over the map, we've got something like a 20% compliance rate with ISPs. 20%, something around that. No bigger than 30. So I'm happy to actually pull that data and provide it from, you know, I would have to anonymize it, but the ISP route is completely inadequate. And flight from one ISP to another is a huge problem, registrant flight. And there are lots of sympathetic ISPs in countries in which they're just plain unreachable. Lots of ISP safe harbors. So I hope to be able to give you the numbers that support that argument. But rest assured, we would love to have an ISP route to address these issues. And it's not happening for us or our clients. And we have a pretty large portfolio of data to support that. Thanks.
May I respond? Christian Dawson.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And I will get out of the queue then after I do. I don't need to give my comment. Incorporate that. And Karen, I very much appreciate your comments. I actually was in the group when that came out, and I do understand, have reviewed the white paper that was put together. And when I was talking about to what end, ultimately I was talking about the idea that, listen, I understand that the goal is contactability. Coming from the ISP and hosting background, I am part of the system that Suzanne was discussing, wherein I am responding, my team is responding on a constant basis to law enforcement requests, to requests for information, and we're part of the process, hopefully what you're identifying as the 20% good actors in that system, in order to make sure that bad stuff doesn't happen online. I would love to see that data that you're talking about. That would be extremely useful in trying to figure out whether the scope of the issue, because sitting where I'm sitting, I'm seeing effective tools, good actors with a whole bunch of hosting and cloud providers, with ISPs that are actively engaged and willing to solve problems. And I don't see, for the most part, that the people that aren't doing that are staying in business for very long. Now, there's certainly a black market, but what I'm trying, or a whole bunch of bad actors in certain parts of the system, and there always will be. My question when I said, to what end, is can we create a system that's so ironclad that it can't be, that you're going to be able to avoid that? Well, ultimately, we're going to have somebody check a box. And a bad actor, are they going to check the right box? Can we guarantee? So we're going to build this whole system, and will it be any more effective to raise your numbers, or will it just create levels of bureaucracy? I don't know the answer to that, but it's something that I think we need to consider as we move forward and try to add these layers. That's all.
Line. Still get some other business in.
Volker Kreimer speaking for the record. Just three small points. This is something that's the first one to what something that Stephanie said. We had a very productive session with the registrars, I must say. They had a very productive session with law enforcement earlier this week. Very helpful, very interesting to find out what their needs were. However, one answer to a question that I posed was a bit disconcerting when we asked them if they could provide any examples or data or statistics or anything of how or if at all the changes in the RAA that they demanded originally that were intended to enable them to better go after crime on the internet had any effect. They weren't able to provide anything. Any example, not a single one. And I found that a bit disappointing. And the other point, maybe we just do something like Kieran said, maybe we just need an ICANN for hosting then, an organization that deals with hosting companies, just as ICANN deals with domain name registration companies. Maybe that would be a solution. I have policies there that work all over the world. There may be a jurisdictional problem, there may be an enforcement problem, but maybe that's what it needs.
Kathy Kleiman, two quick points. One is, if we're reopening this, please let me know so I can book my Tuesdays at 10 a.m. Eastern for the next 3 years. I didn't think we were going back down this. I really thought we were going into a final report. And we had really talked about this for months and months. But one thing I'd like, since we are here, we're hearing, I wanted, there are a lot of people here who we haven't heard from. I'd love to know, we're here to talk to the public. Please come to the table, there are open mics. Let us know what you're thinking, because that's one of the reasons we're here. We know, you're hearing voices and concerns and issues that we've been voicing now for months. So come to the table, share with us what you're thinking. We'd appreciate it.
Is there anybody else who thought you were in the queue when I said we'll cut the queue? In the line that we talked about.